This is Living Real Radio, real issues in real time with your host, John Ngadi, Greg Walton, Robert Fiducia, and Julianne Staley. Living Real Radio is sponsored by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized by Closets by Design. Call them today to schedule your appointment at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700.
Good morning. Welcome to Living Real Radio. I'm your host, John Ngadi, with Greg Walton. And today we have Daniel Shackle from the Knights of Columbus, who goes to, what's the name of that church in Dixon?
St. Christopher's.
St. Christopher's in Dixon. But yeah, but he's actually from the Memphis Diocese originally.
Okay.
Yes, that's why we like him.
I was born in the Anchorage Diocese.
Oh, Anchorage, Alaska.
Anchorage, Alaska. We moved in 1984 to the Memphis Diocese, yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it like being a Catholic in Anchorage, you know?
Cold.
How long were you there? How long were you in Alaska?
We moved when I was 9.
Okay, so you do Savannah. Have memories of Alaska.
Yeah.
Just kid memories, you know, like playing in the snow, nothing to do with driving in it or all of the hardships that go with it. It was just fun for us.
That's one place I've never been. I always wanted to go, Alaska. You ever been to Alaska?
Never, yeah. 46 out of the 50, and that's one of the ones that are in the remainder.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Got to go.
Yeah, so we have Daniel on today because Daniel has a very unique story that we're going to unveil here in a minute. And but how long have you been with the Knights of Columbus?
Well, I joined the Knights when I was 18. My father was a district deputy, and so I think they needed membership. So I joined when I was 18 and wasn't very active for several years. I had gone off in the military and different things with work. I couldn't be very active. But when I was about 26 or so, I got active again. And I joined their insurance force when I was almost 29 years old. So almost 15 years now I've been working for the Knights of Columbus.
And your title would be district manager?
General agent.
General agent.
General agent, yeah.
He's over three states.
Three states.
And a little bit of Virginia.
A little bit of Virginia.
So people might not know what the Knights of Columbus is. So the Knights of Columbus is the world's largest Catholic fraternal service organization. It was founded in 1882 by Father Michael J. McGivney in New Haven, Connecticut.
That's correct.
And really what, you know, for a lot of Catholics who were immigrants at the time, there was a ceiling, you know, with America being primarily, you know, Protestant and there's, and so it was difficult, right, for Catholic men to care for their families or for their families to be cared for in the event of the head of household dying,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
And Father McGivney saw that need and so organized the Knights. And so that's why insurance
is a part of it.
Is a part of it because it's about caring for, you know, your kids and your family. And so that's, and you're a big part of that now. So you that's your gig, right? Doing
the insurance side. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also involved in the fraternal side. You know,
along
with the need to protect widows and orphans, there was also, as you said, alluded to, a lot of bigotry against Catholics during the time. There was a lot of Irish immigrants coming in, Italian immigrants coming in. People here were afraid that the Catholics were going to turn this into Europe and they would be underneath the thumb of the church and so on. So one of the things that Father McGivney wanted us to do was to be able to bind together to protect our Catholic faith from the bigotry of the day as well. So we have four principles: charity, unity, fraternity, and patriotism. Whenever he started us up, we had charity and unity. So charity for our families, charity in the community, unity in protecting our faith against the bigotry, and unity in protecting our families. So that's really what the Knights of Columbus sprung forth from.
Yeah.
And now we're, I think, the 47th largest insurer in North America.
Wow.
And just about almost every parish has a Knights of Columbus council.
Right.
Correct.
Most of them. I'm only third degree. I haven't gotten the uniform yet.
I'm third degree, too.
Are you?
Yeah.
So you're not patriotic. I got it.
Well, you know, y'all changed the uniform up now. You know, you got new uniforms. They got the new, you know, they don't wear the big hats anymore, right?
They got a beret now.
Yeah, they got a beret now, and I always liked it because they carry that sword. They still carrying
sure.
the sword?
They are. And, you know, we've also changed up the way you join a little bit. You know, before you had to fill out a membership document, show up to an admissions committee, come to what we called a first degree, which taught you the lesson of charity.
Right.
Each of our degrees teach you a lesson, one of those: charity, unity, fraternity, and patriotism. They've allowed you now to actually, if you're a really busy guy and you don't have time to go to meetings and all these kind of things, you can go to kfc.org/join, and you can actually become an online member. And then you'll be contacted by the local councils to see if you want to actually become a member of a local group. Otherwise, you can kind of be an at-large member of the Knights of Columbus.
And that's K of C, not KFC.
Not the chicken. Not
yeah,
the chicken.
It throws me for a loop when people say that all the time. Hey, you know, we got an announcement for the KFC. And I'm like, oh, really?
KOFC.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I always have to tell people that when they write checks. Don't put KFC.
Yeah.
That's a lot of chicken you got to buy with that. Right? Yeah. KOFC.org/join.
Well, let's get into it, Daniel, because the story behind Father McGivney and the journey that you and your wife have been on, and it's just an amazing story. And I think our listeners will really benefit from hearing that, because it's such a journey of faith and trust. And so we want to hear about that journey that you and your wife have been on.
Well, first of all, we're not exceptionally holy people, right? We're just normal people that are trying to get through our life. You know, we do have 13 children and we homeschool them, but we don't feel like we're that extraordinary in the faith department. You know, I think if you're well catechized Catholic, then you let principles guide you instead of emotions. And I think that maybe the biggest contributing factor to our situation was just the fact that, you know, our parents gave us these principles and we decided to live by them, and God worked through that. So we're still sinners like everybody else, right? I work for the Knights of Columbus, and like most insurance companies, they have awards trips for their representatives if they're successful. And a few years ago in 2014, they made the trip, a pilgrimage to Lisbon and Madrid. So all of the agents and their wives were going to come together and spend some time together and celebrate their success from the year before. It was the first time, though, that the order had ever made that trip kind of a pilgrimage. So we had scheduled a pilgrimage to Fatima while we were in Lisbon and Madrid. Actually in Lisbon, but so, of course, at the time we weren't pregnant yet when they announced that, but we found out a short time later that we were going to have a child. The trip was scheduled for March, so we found out around Christmas time that we were pregnant, and we had our ultrasounds and everything, and I'll try to leave out the names of doctors and hospitals here to kind of limit exposure for them in this story. We had our ultrasounds and at one clinic, and they said, hey, there's some things wrong here, and you should go to this high-risk pregnancy clinic at a very well-known area hospital and deal with them. So we went and had another ultrasound and were brought in this small room, and the doctor came in and she said, look, you know, the child has Down syndrome. And we said, okay, we understand that. That's fine. She said, he also has fetal high drops. I had no idea what that was. Who's ever heard of that, right? It's one of those rare conditions that somebody just kind of throws on you and you don't know how to react. So she showed us on the ultrasounds how his skin was kind of separated from his body. He looked like kind of like a little balloon, mm-hmm. You know, on the ultrasounds. He was just full of fluid. His body wasn't getting rid of fluid. So his lungs just looked like little crumpled up pieces of paper in this big sea of fluid, and, you know, probably a quarter of an inch of fluid all the way around his body under his skin. And she said, you know, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I've never seen a child survive this diagnosis. She said, so you really have two options? And she said, and I was raised Catholic, so I understand what the church teaches about abortion and everything. She said, but there's really no hope here. We can either terminate the pregnancy now, or we can just wait for him to die naturally and then deliver a stillborn baby. So that was our two options, right? And I think the assumption from the facility was that we would go ahead and terminate the pregnancy, which we could never do that. You know, that's God's job to terminate a life, not ours. And so just a week or so before, I had gone to another meeting at the Knights of Columbus, and they brought in a guy here from Nashville named Rory Vaden. He works for Southwestern Consulting. And he told us a story about in his own family how there was death and tragedy and things, and how God used it for good. And the main point of his speech was, lacking the wisdom of God, we have no reason to question why bad things happen, right? So after we got this diagnosis, I sent out an email to friends and family and just said, look, I actually used his words. I didn't realize I did until later when I went back and pulled up the email that I said that, you know, lacking the knowledge of God. I said, please pray to Father Michael McGivney for the healing of my son. It doesn't look like he's going to make it. And we've been given these options. Like I said before, I would have never considered ending the pregnancy. And I was very angry, actually, at the doctor, very angry. And my wife, who was always calming me down, because I got too much spark sometimes, she says, why are you so angry at her? And I said, you know what? It's not a father's job to kill his children. It's a father's job to protect his children at the most basic level. And so this doctor telling me to kill my child flies in the face of everything that I am as a father, right? She said, well, she's just looking out for me and, you know, for my mental state and my health and things like that. And I said, I understand, but it still just flies all over me that she asked me to kill my child. Now, we had this trip planned in March, obviously, a couple weeks after this diagnosis. And here we've been told that your child's just going to die somewhere along the way, right? So understandably, we were very scared. My wife was very scared. There are conditions that she can pick up that would mirror the baby's condition. So she could have started developing the same fluid in her body that the baby had, called mirror syndrome. So we prayed a lot about whether we should even take this trip or not because it seemed very risky. But we also thought, you know, if there is any hope of him surviving, it's like I told her, who is this doctor? You know, we've got a pilgrimage to Fatima planned. Who does she think she is telling me that he's not going to make it, right? So we decided to go ahead with it, and we went a few days early. We went to Rome with some parishioners here at St. Philip's, and we met Father Michael Fye, who's a pastor at St. Anne's here in Nashville now, and he's from our parish. So his mother had made some beautiful handmade vestments for some of the priests at the North American College. So our souvenir suitcase was full of vestments on the way over and souvenirs on the way back. But he took us around Rome and showed us the great places to eat Italian food and all of those things. And the last day we were there, he said, would you like to do Mass in St. Peter's before you head to Lisbon to meet the rest of the group? And we said, absolutely. He said, well, I've never prayed Mass in St. Peter's, so I'd love to do it. So we all met him at St. Peter's, and we were assigned at random. For those of you who have been there, there's probably 100 side altars in there. I don't actually know the number, but there's a lot, right? So little altar boy came out of the sacristy with a chalice and took us across the floor of St. Peter. The day we had gotten there to Rome was the day that the Holy Father announced that there would be a year of mercy. And the day we were leaving, they were setting up St. Peter's for the opening Mass for the day or the year of mercy. We went across the floor and they gave us the Our Lady of Prompt Succor altar, which the Knights of Columbus had actually paid about a decade before to renovate that altar. I didn't realize that at the time. My wife did. I usually don't get to read the Knights of Columbus magazine. She usually gets it before me and I never see it. So she knows a lot more of this stuff than I do about what's going on with the things in the order. Anyway, we were fortunate enough to have Mass at the Our Lady of Prompt Succor altar, and Father Michael asked me to be the altar server, which was a huge honor. I mean, who gets to altar serve in St. Peter's, right?
Right.
I trained the altar servers at St. Christopher's, so when I came back, I showed them the picture on my phone. I was like, hey, keep studying, boys. You know, you could be here too serving at St. Peter's one day, just playing with them. But then we flew out, and we went to Lisbon to meet the rest of the group. Of course, Lisbon is the birthplace of St. Anthony. So we visited his birthplace. We prayed where Pope John Paul had prayed on pilgrimage, you know, down underneath the church there of his birth. We made the pilgrimage to Fatima, and our Supreme Chaplain, Archbishop Laurie, met us there. And we prayed the rosary at the apparition site. And whenever we finished the rosary, he consecrated the Knights of Columbus to the Immaculate Heart of Mary while we were there, which was a shock to all of us. We didn't know that was going to happen, but it was pretty neat to see.
You know, it's cool because today actually is the feast day of, it's October 13th. So it's the feast day of the miracle of the sun, the last miracle of Fatima.
Right.
So it's so cool that we're talking to you on Living Real today in the midst of this. And maybe we could tell our listeners a little bit about Fatima.
Absolutely.
You know, so in 1917, three shepherd children in Portugal, in Fatima, witnessed apparitions of the Virgin Mary where she appeared to them and shared messages with them. Lucia dos Santos and her cousins, Francisco and Jacinta Marto. So you're visiting the site where these apparitions happened. Right. And you know, so just, so if you want to know a little bit about more about Fatima, you can look that up. Just look up the apparitions in Fatima. But, and so this is really kind of cool, but
absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
So I didn't mean to interrupt the story but it's okay, good for people to have some context.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. And I mean, look, just adding on to what you said, it's not just a religious phenomenon. I mean, there were secular reporters there, people that came to scoff at the apparition and stuff on that October 13th day, and it was witnessed by 70,000
people. Yeah, so there's this miracle that happened with the sun where it changed colors, and it actually moved in the sky, and thousands of people witnessed this, including reporters and all that. So it's, a really profound experience.
Probably the largest miracle or the largest witness to a miracle since the parting of the Red Sea, if you think about it.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Right in the 20th century.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And a lot of good messages for our time. So,
yeah.
So
back to the story.
Back to the story.
That's great. So we consecrated the Supreme Chaplain consecrated the Knights of Columbus, the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And then we had Mass there in the Basilica at Fatima. And my wife and I hadn't told many people what we were going through. Maybe just a handful of people on the trip knew what we were going through. But the reading that day was the man came to Jesus and said, my son is going to die. I think it's John chapter 4, I think. My son's going to die. Please come help him. And Jesus says, you're a hard-hearted generation. You have to have signs and wonders to believe. Mm. Go forth, your son will live. Of course, we were praying really hard for our son while we were standing there, and they have the little section up front where all the sick people sit and all the people with special prayer intentions and things. But we just blended in the crowd back in the back. We weren't trying to make a spectacle of anything. But when that gospel passage was read, you know, it hit us both pretty hard. Like, wow, how appropriate is this? That
I'd be a hot mess.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's hard for me, honestly, to tell the story without being a hot mess. But, you know, to travel all this way and holding these things in your heart, you know, that you're praying for and stuff, and then to have that be the gospel reading of the day, it was just very powerful for us, very powerful. So after that, we had a few days in Madrid, and we were there on March 19th, which I don't know what we're thinking in America. You know, in Spain, March 19th is Father's Day, and that's the Feast of St. Joseph. Why wouldn't we have it that day, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a holy day of obligation in Spain. So we like to go around and look on all the churches whenever we're somewhere, because just the architecture and the beauty and the culture and everything in those churches. So we had probably visited 6 or 7 churches that day. And somebody made a comment in the group that every time we come in here, it's been the consecration. When we come in the back door, it's been the elevation of the host in all of these churches, you know, which I don't know if it has anything to do with the story or not, but I just thought that was pretty neat. Well, we came back to the U.S., and of course we had an ultrasound scheduled right before we left to make sure that they thought the baby would make it through the next 10 days. And then we had one scheduled the day after we came back to make sure he was still alive, to see if we needed to induce the labor or whatever. So the original doctor that we had saw wasn't there that day. It was one of the other 4 big doctors in the clinic that saw us, and she came in the room and sat down and said, well, looks like we're going to have a baby. And what do you mean we're going to have a baby? You told us that he wasn't going to live. And she said, well, the ultrasound's clear. Whatever, you know, the high drops is completely gone and he's going to be just fine. So that floored us, you know, and we were calling him Benedict up to that point. That's what we were going to name him, baby Ben. And that's what everybody was calling him and everything. But whenever I said my prayers and asked Father McGivney to pray for him, I said, hey, look, if you will intercede for him, we'll name him after you, you know? So my wife told the doctor right then, she said, well, I guess we're changing his name to Michael McGivney then. And the doctor said, why would you change his name to Michael McGivney? And she told the doctor why. And the doctor said, oh, I know who that is. My dad was a knight. And my mom still gets the magazines. I know exactly who that is, you know. So she got so excited that that her dad was a knight and she was a part of this whole thing now. You know, there were several months left. He wasn't due till July, and this was March. So there were several months left of going in a week, you know, once a week, twice a week, all of that as you do when you're pregnant to do checkups. And we never saw the original doctor again. You know, the only time I saw her one time was coming out of the food court, and she was getting off the elevator. And when our eyes met, she kind of closed her coat like it was a cold winter day and turned around and walked the other way. That was basically the only time that we had seen her. And of course, as I said before, I got a little bit too much spark sometimes. And I told my wife, I was like, you know, whenever he's born, I want to hold him up like Simba and say, how many babies didn't make it, you know, because of this advice. Probably not the best thing to do, but So I had a conference I needed to go to in San Antonio, which I thought was funny. It's the city of St. Anthony, but I was scheduled to go on May the 13th, which is the feast of Our Lady of Fatima, is when I was scheduled to go to this. That was the beginning of the apparitions in Fatima. It was May 13th. She appeared the 13th of every month, with the exception of August, until October 13th, when the great miracle happened.
Right.
And the reason for August, just to let the listeners know, is that the children were having these apparitions and they were reporting them, and there was a lot of pressure from authorities for them to denounce that these apparitions were happening, that they were crazy, all of these things. And they were actually kidnapped on August 13th. They were in captivity and couldn't go to the August 13th apparition. So that's why she didn't appear on August 13th. But she did, a few days later, appear to them and tell them about the coming miracles. It was just a couple days late.
Which would have been the Feast of the Assumption.
Right.
It was a couple days after that.
Right. I think it was 6 days later, actually, when she appeared to him. I could be wrong. So I left on May the 13th to go to San Antonio. And I was hesitant to go because of everything, you know, the mirror syndrome, the health of the baby, my wife and all that. And she was like, just go ahead. You need to go. You should be there. The baby's not due for 2 months. Just get out of here and go. Right. So I was scheduled to be gone for 2 days. And on the morning of the 15th, I got a phone call saying, well, my wife had loaded up all the kids. Michael's godfather was being ordained a deacon that day. It's Father Dan Steiner at Holy Rosary. He was being ordained a deacon on the 15th of May. And she had loaded them all up. She was going to have her little biweekly checkup and then head over to the cathedral for the ordination. Well, when she got there, they told her placenta was failing and that they had to do a C-section. So I was in San Antonio, and I got the phone call that she was...
How many weeks was she at there at that point?
I don't remember the exact number. I think he was due in 2 months, almost exactly 2 months early.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
1 week short of 2 months. So pretty early little baby. And so they performed the C-section. I was somewhere between Dallas and Nashville on a Southwest flight to get here. So I wasn't there for the labor or the delivery of it or any of that stuff. I came afterwards. But one of the doctors was on call there, and the other two ladies kicked him out. The original doctor that saw us and her nurses had told us how disturbed she was by what had happened, that she had carried his records to all these conferences to see where she could have went wrong and what she could have done differently. But she never, like I said, she never made any contact with us during that whole period. But she showed up for the C-section. And then the other doctor who knew who Father McGivney was showed up for the C-section. And they kicked the other doctor out and told him, we're doing this. So,
wow.
Change of heart.
Exactly. When the original doctor that we saw came in, she had a couple minutes alone with my wife and said, you know, Michelle, it looks like we're going to have a baby. And I know that we never thought we would make it to this day, but I'm so happy for you guys. And Michelle said, much better than what I was going to say, but my wife said, doctor, I'm so glad you're here. I brought you a gift. She said, this is a bottle of holy water that we got for you in Fatima, and this is a miraculous medal, you know. So the doctor broke down just sobbing and said, you don't know how much this means to me. And she took her necklace off and put the miraculous medal on it and put the holy water in her pocket and said, let's go have a baby.
Wow.
And I'm told to this day she keeps a the ultrasound picture side by side on her desk and tells people that that's to always remind me that there's no such thing as no hope. So I think the most powerful part of the whole story is her conversion, really, and her seeing the supernatural reality of what was going on. So very powerful time in our family's life. I think, you know, there's a lot of other things when you have something like that that goes on. There's a lot of stress and tension in families, and, you know, it really feels like you're under spiritual attack sometimes, you know, outside of this miracle.
Yeah.
That the gates of hell are trying to rip you apart, literally, to keep all of this from happening, you know. That's the way I felt anyway, and we felt like we were under that for several weeks. And Father John O'Neill, I don't know if you guys know him, he's pastor in Centerville, but he was filling in for our priest who was on vacation one Sunday, and I just said, Father, I need you to anoint our family after Mass. And so he was more than happy to do that. Wonderful, wonderful priest, Father John O'Neill. So he did. He anointed our family, and it was like you turned the water off. You know, it was like we had this veil of spiritual protection then that was guarding us, you know. And I didn't realize at the time the significance of May the 15th. In January, I was getting ready for a meeting of my agents, and I was in my office, and I have hanging up on the wall the charter of Council One of the Knights of Columbus, which was San Salvador Council. And it was May 15th, 1882. Big signature on there, like John Hancock, you know, Michael J. McGivney. So very powerful time in our lives. We're very humbled to be a part of it. And when you're going through it, all you know is the struggle and the daily grind and all of that. You don't see what God is doing in your life or doing for the people around you in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. Through what you're going through, all you do is you feel that pain and that, you know, like desert time, right, basically. And it wasn't until after he was born and we started looking back at all of these things that we had been through and thinking, you know, when the Knights of Columbus, how long have you been a knight, Greg?
Gosh, since 1993 or 94, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So about the same time as me. And what about you, Jim?
Yeah, I'm about the same as well.
So, you know, for that whole time, just about, the Knights of Columbus has been saying, pray for the canonization of our founder, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's
right.
been prayers written and everything. So for all of us, for the last 25, 30 years, we've been praying for this, right? Millions of people praying for this. And then for the Knights of Columbus, before we were ever pregnant, to decide, hey, look, we're going to make a pilgrimage in honor of Our Lady. And we're going to consecrate ourselves to Our Lady. And all of these decisions that were made and all of these prayers that were done that were outside of our control, right? Mm-hmm. We had nothing to do with that. And that's why I say this isn't a story of my holiness or my wife's holiness or anything. It's a story of the prayers of the people of God being answered. And we were the happy beneficiaries mm-hmm. of those prayers. So, and I think, you know, you look at Father McGivney was the oldest of 13 children. And he's the youngest of 13 children. You know, we work for the Knights of Columbus. We work for taking care of widows and orphans, which was very, you know, the biggest thing that drove Father McGivney in his mission to found mm-hmm. the Knights of Columbus was caring for Catholic families like that. The Knights of Columbus is the largest supporter of the Special Olympics that I know of. We've given them over $50 million over their history. We fly their athletes around the world for World Games. Mm-hmm. Many councils put on Special Olympics events. So our tie-in to those with physical and intellectual disabilities as an organization is very strong. We also are probably one of the most vocally pro-life organizations. I mean, you can't watch the March for Life without seeing 10,000 Knights of Columbus symbols on every sign, right?
Right.
I mean, really. So whenever we got to looking back at everything and you see the hand of God moving through all of this stuff and you really, you just couldn't, I don't think a human author could make this story up with all of the tie-ins and the, you know, God's author of life. I guess he's the author of this story too. It's just very humbling to be a part of something like that. And to, you know, you, you're raised and you're told to believe in Christ and you go to Mass and you do all these things and you say, I believe in him and I believe he's really there and everything. But I'm going to tell you something. When he shows up like that, it's a very humbling experience, you know, and it's like St. Peter said, depart from me, Lord, for I'm a sinful man. That's kind of how you feel whenever that mm-hmm. happens, because it becomes so real in your life that it's almost undeniable. So
yeah.
And that's what this show's all about.
Yeah.
Living real. And that's amazing. Now, how old is your son now?
He's 4 and a half. He's 4 and a half, and he's doing very well. He had a heart defect when he was born. Mm-hmm. So he spent about 70 days in the ICU and had some heart surgery. And then we got him out, and his first Thanksgiving, he went back in the ICU because he got some type of virus, and they gave him the wrong medicine that was not good for heart patients. And so he ended up in the ICU again until after New Year's. But at one point, we actually, to add on to the story, he was, you know, we were preparing for him to die again in that second bout in the ICU. Nobody knew what was going on because he just started retaining fluid again and starting to get bigger, and they couldn't get him to turn around and all of this stuff. And so I actually called up to Supreme, because
the Supreme Council.
Supreme Council, actually, yes, up in New York, Connecticut. Right.
Yeah.
So our home office building there. And they have a chapel in our office tower, and they have daily mass in there. So I called a friend of mine and said, hey, look, Michael is in very grave danger here. I would appreciate it if you guys could pray for him at mass today. So they announced on the PA system that, you know, Michael needed prayers during mass that day. So they said the chapel was overflowing with all the people that showed up, and they had a mass for him. And about an hour later, the shift change of the doctors happened. They got a new doctor in there, and he said, I don't like how this is going. We're going to change this and change this and change this. And within just a couple hours, he was on the road to recovery. So
wow,
prayers do work.
Wow.
That's awesome. Well, of the songs you picked, which one of those songs you think fits?
You know, I think they all fit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I was thinking the one that struck me was Be Not Afraid. Because what you're dealing with, right, is your fear for your children, and that can send us in all kinds of directions in how you wanted to react to the doctor, you know?
Right, right.
All those types of things. And not to lose hope. And so how about we do Be Not Afraid?
Absolutely, let's do it.
All right, here's the St. Louis Jesuits' Be Not Afraid, done by our friend Sarah Hart. We'll be right back on Living Real Radio.
You shall cross the barren desert, but you shall not die. Thank you.
listening to Living Real Radio on Hippie Radio 94.5.
Honey, have you seen my Allen wrench?
Mom, where's my baseball glove?
Dad, do you know where my ballet shoes are?
Has anyone seen my phone charger? I can't find it anywhere.
Tired of losing things? Tired of the clutter? Let Closets by Design help you organize your life. Have one of their experts come to your home for a free in-home design consultation. Whether it's a small closet, your office space, or pantry, or even a big garage, Closets by Design can help you make the most from the space you already have. And all units are built in their factory right here in Franklin, Tennessee. Call them today at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700. You'll be amazed at what Closets by Design can do for you and your family. It's the best time of year to organize your entire home. Right now, get 40% off. You heard me right. 40% off their everyday low prices, plus free installation. Call Closets by Design today, 615-261-8700, or visit closetsbydesign.com.
Welcome back to Living Real Radio. I'm Greg Walton with my co-host, John Angotti. And we're talking to Daniel Shackle, who has told us the story of I guess the miraculous intervention on behalf of your child, Michael, and his birth, you know, when he was told that he was not going to survive. And Father Michael McGivney, founder of the Knights of Columbus, was kind of instrumental in that for you in terms of you seeking his intervention and prayer for your family. And so we understand that there's actually a cause for his canonization, right, going on right now. So canonization in the Catholic Church is kind of a list of folks that, you know, for some reason or another, we've been given signs that they are certainly in heaven and that they intercede on our behalf. So how someone gets canonized is usually there's a cause raised on behalf of that individual, and the Congregation for the Causes of Saints evaluates, scrutinizes their life. And then in addition to that, there need to be two undisputable miracles. From what I understand, like the miracle of your child's birth is in consideration.
It has been turned in for investigation.
Yeah.
There are several levels of the canonization process. So
yeah,
you start out with servant of God, and they look at their life and things to see if there was anything scandalous in there. And, you know, then they can be called servant of God. And then there's another level called venerable.
Mm-hmm.
And to become venerable, they do a much deeper investigation into their writings and all of these other things. And then they're declared venerable. We just had Fulton J. Sheen being moved up, and we're young enough to remember that he was venerable not too long ago, right?
Mm-hmm. And now he's been beatified.
Right, yeah. Exactly. He's about to be beatified. So there's a progression that they go through, and it
right.
can take decades or centuries for them to move through this progression.
Mm-hmm.
But the venerable is really where it stops until there's divine intervention, right? I mean, the servant of God, the venerable, that's man's investigation of this person.
Mm-hmm.
And just for the benefit of those who maybe don't understand what the Catholic Church believes, we have this thing called the Communion of Saints, right?
Right.
Because I know some people are thinking right now, why is this guy praying to dead people and what does it have to do with his son, right? And I can appreciate that. However, we have a different vision of this continuum than some others do, right? So is the Communion of Saints biblical, right? I believe it is, because there's plenty of evidence in the Holy Scriptures of people coming from heaven back to earth or being taken to heaven.
We have Moses and Elijah confirming Christ as the Messiah, you know,
absolutely.
Right, with the transfiguration.
Exactly. And those were, here we have two dead guys that are appearing with the Messiah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or we have the cases of the Enoch that's assumed into heaven. And, you know, so there's the whole continuum in the Scripture of people being taken to heaven, right? Also, one of the books that we don't have in the King James Version that we do have in the Catholic Version is the Book of the Maccabees. And then there they talk about the Maccabean people when they're preparing for battle, talk about praying and asking basically those that went before them to pray for them mm-hmm. before they go into battle. We also have in the book of Revelation, you know, the martyrs under the altar of God in heaven crying for vengeance, right? Mm-hmm. So right there in Revelation, we have this image of the communion of saints being in the presence of God and asking him for favors, right? So it is there is a scriptural foundation to it, right? So we call ourselves the church militant because we're still fighting for our souls, basically, here on earth. We're struggling. We're trying to stay close to Christ. And then we have the church triumphant, which has already passed into the next life. And they've made that transition. And that would be the church triumphant, the communion of saints. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and we believe that they can pray for us. Not that we're worshiping them as God or anything else, but we believe in the reality that there is another spiritual world out there, which is heaven. And we have those that went before us, our holy relatives, the saints, people like that are already in the presence of God, as it talks about in the Bible. And they are able to pray for us just like those souls under the altar in heaven in Revelation. So that's kind of where this comes from. So I could ask John and I could ask Greg to pray for my son as well. And I did ask a lot of people here on earth to pray for him as well. But I also find a certain amount of comfort in the fact that if I know someone is already in the presence of God and has been found to be pleasing to God, why would I not ask that person to pray for him also, whether it be mm-hmm. Father McGivney or the Blessed Mother or any number of the saints, St. Peter, St. Paul? Why wouldn't we ask them to intercede as well? Why would we stop with only Greg and John?
Right.
Right.
One of the things I think of too is, you know, the Christian foundation of the understanding of God is love. And love is about community and concern for one another, that we're made in the image and likeness of God because God is a community, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. So the question to me becomes, why wouldn't God have us continue to be praying and showing concern for one another? If our God is one of love, then that love and concern for each other is not stopped by death. It continues.
Evidenced, you know, by the transfiguration of our Lord.
Yeah, right.
Where he was comforted.
Right.
When we say the creed on Sunday, you know, the I believe, and the missions and stuff I've been given, I have people take the word believe out and put trust in. Mm-hmm. I trust in one God, the Father. Because you can, when we say it over and over again on Sunday, it's, you know, I believe in his Holy Son, I believe in the Holy Spirit. But do you trust in that? There's an extra step when you trust, because when you doubt, which everybody has doubting moments, in your dark times, you know, that's when your faith kicks in, when you can't reason anymore, and all you have left is just to either choose faith or choose despair. Mm-hmm. You know? And when you choose faith, you know, you see all that, and then the fruits come from that.
And then that's when you feel the freedom, right? When you trust.
Yeah, when you trust.
I mean, even the devil believes that there's a God. Right?
Absolutely.
Even the devil believes that Jesus is the Son of God, but he doesn't trust him, right?
Right.
He doesn't put him first. So,
yeah.
Kudos to you. That's huge. I mean, that's really the paradigm, right? Anybody can believe that it's true, but to trust.
Right.
And to abandon yourself and gain that freedom of abandonment.
Yeah.
That's really where
I don't know about you. The older I get, that's all I got left.
Hey, look, you don't have a choice, right?
Well, I mean, faith is, I mean, you know, if I want anything from my children, I want them to choose faith.
Absolutely.
Want them to
that's
really,
it.
To,
that's it.
So that they, because they're going to go through the difficult times too. And, you know, the world we live in today, suicide's high. Parents have, I just heard this yesterday, my friend who works for the USCCB, for every one Catholic that comes in, we're losing six.
Right.
People aren't trusting us, you know. So what is it that we're not providing folks that they can trust, that what, you know, the Catholic Church holds is this truth of God wanting to be encounter, you know, to have this encounter and this kinship with us. Mm-hmm. You used your word. How about that?
There you go.
Thanks, sir.
It's like crazy abandonment, right?
Yeah.
Who has 13 kids?
I mean, what is
That's
up
nuts,
with you? I
right?
mean, would you have a farm out there in Dixon or something?
No farm. We got 6 acres in the woods so the kids can run and play. But
I bet you get your grass cut with for nothing.
Yep, I do. That's free grass awesome. Service.
Yeah.
Got to feed them. But yeah, free
well,
grass service.
You've had a heck of a vision here, Daniel, and why don't we play that song?
Yeah, that's great. So, yeah, one of your choices was Be Thou My Vision.
Yeah, I think that really ties into this as well. That's part of the abandonment that John was talking about, right? It's not yeah. my vision. Lord, give me your vision to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And trust that what's going on is going to turn out the right way.
Yeah.
And also, if my son hadn't been healed, that still could have been in God's plan too, right? And being able
Absolutely.
To accept that.
Yeah.
Right? So I know there's a lot of people who prayed hard for family or whatever, and nothing came of it. In their mind, nothing came of it because they didn't get what they wanted, right? And that could have happened to us just as easily. But it still would have been God's will, God's plan for the larger scheme of things. And we were willing to accept that as well.
Yeah.
Or just,
you know. It's appropriate too, because it's, you know, it's an Irish hymn, right? Father Michael.
Right.
You know, and, coming from this foundation of speaking up for folks treated as second class. And we know there's a lot of folks today who are feeling like they're second class too. And all right. So here's Be Thou My Vision. By the band For Him.
We'll be right back on Living Real on Hippie Radio 94.5.
Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. Not be all else to me, say that thou art. Thou my best thought. By day or by night, waking or sleeping, thy presence my light. Be thou my wisdom and thou my true word. I ever with thee and thou with me, Lord.
Welcome back to Living Real Radio with John Angotti and Greg Walton. Julianne Staley is still in Spain. She's probably on her way back by now, I think.
Yeah.
And Robert Fiducia is busy with things today, so he couldn't be here for the recording. But we're glad to have Daniel Shackle with us here today, talking about the miracle of his son. And we had a great conversation about miracles and Father McGivney is being blessed. Is he considered blessed
He's
now?
He's venerable right now.
He's venerable.
Right. So when you get your first miracle approved, you become blessed. And then when the second miracle is approved, you become a saint.
It's kind of like joining the Knights.
Yeah.
Right.
You got your first degree.
4 degrees, servant of God, venerable, blessed, saint.
Also, in place of miracle, there can be martyrdom, too. So it can be martyrdom and a miracle.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Martyrdom. Right. That's a good point, Greg.
Okay. Yeah. So you were talking about, we had all kind of good conversation going on here on the break.
I know. Well, you know, I thought I'd point, you know, we've been talking about Fatima, and I just thought it's kind of cool because we actually have a pilgrimage going to Fatima, November 3rd through 12th in 2020. And if you'd like to know more about that, visit stphilipfranklin.com and check it out.
Yeah. So let's just talk a little bit about the Knights, just so our listeners, anybody wants to join the Knights. You know, what was the vision of the Knights besides providing insurance? I mean, the Knights does a lot with fundraising. Mm-hmm. Every organization, every church that I know, that everybody goes, well, let's ask the Knights. The Knights will do it. Put up the chairs. Let's ask the Knights.
Right.
You know.
So, yeah, we are a source of manpower for the parish. We also do a lot of fundraising on the local level. The Knights of Columbus has a Supreme Council. It has a state council for each jurisdiction, and then it has local councils. St. Philip's has its own local council. They run their own show. They keep their own checking account. They plan their own activities.
Right.
So it's really a locally controlled group, right?
Yeah.
Now, as far as the larger vision of the Knights of Columbus, you know, what we want to do is help guys become better Catholics, become better fathers, and take better care of their family. That's really basically on the manhood level where we want to be. You know, still going back to what Father McGivney said, protecting our family, defending the faith, right? Not only in the community, but in ourselves.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to stay true to that vision. And we provide opportunities, I think, through that with the council membership for a man to be able to show his children how to give back. You know, we have charitable opportunities. We have the Tootsie Roll Drive to help the mentally disabled.
Yep. Right.
I remember when I was a kid standing out there in the freezing cold with my dad, handing out Tootsie Rolls and taking donations, yeah. And now my children do it, you know. Or if we have a group of our council members we have in the past that go do the polar plunge, you know, sometimes my older children do that, or helping clean up after pancake breakfast or whatever. It's really a chance to get your family involved and pull them into the faith and make those connections, yeah. And teach them that they should be given back all the time while you're deepening your own faith.
Yeah. Hmm. My brother's a big Knight in West Virginia. He does the Tootsie Roll Drive. He was like some type of state rep or something, but he's very, very, very active in the Knights of Columbus in West Virginia. So kudos to my brother, Bob, who's out there supporting the Knights. And
hey, Bob.
Hey.
Yeah.
That's right.
Keep up the good work.
That's right. That's right. Daniel, thank you for being here today, yeah. and sharing that story. You know, I think when we talk to folks about God, that God is ineffable. You know, the understanding of God that we have is never enough to try to explain that in words. We just don't necessarily have the words to explain the mystery of all of it. When we were talking about people have different denominations, you know, there's 40-some thousand different denominations, I think, just in the United States alone, of other type of faiths, based upon what people feels, you know, where they're feeling fed or what fits into their agenda, right? We were talking about that. And yet, you know, we're not always called to come to a comfortability of, but we're Christ calls us into these difficult times that stretches us as a community. And I think, you know, as a Catholic church, I think we're being stretched constantly as the world changes, and the more information that we have about ourselves, I think it stretches us and widens our embrace, or else, you know, you can say, well, I'm out of here. And then you go to someplace else we were talking about, and I like what that guy's saying. It fits into my theology. And then we end up creating a God that looks like us, you know. It's our image of God instead of being made in the image of God's heart, mercy, mm-hmm. compassion, and love that is beyond anything that we could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Is that too much?
No, that was just beautiful, John. I just had to pause, you know, for a moment and take it all in.
Take it all in, Greg. Take it all in. So today, to the 13th, we have a big concert tonight with Eric Jenness.
Yeah.
From Louisville, who goes out, right. And does prison ministry. He talks about the men that he deals with who have struggled in life and bring truth, mm-hmm. beauty, and goodness to them through music and preaching the word of God and that kind of stuff.
And also, our Knights here are actually hosting a public rosary at 3 p.m. today at St. Philip, outside by our statue of Mary.
Okay.
And so... In celebration of that final miracle.
And plus, this is the month of Right to Life.
It's, yeah.
month. So it's beautiful to have that story about your son. And, you know, we keep him still in prayer.
Yeah.
And any other final words, Daniel? Any other kind of...
Well, I think just sitting here listening to you guys talk, I just feel like, you know, you can live your faith on one level and just make it, as you were saying, and in your image instead of in God's image. Or going back to what you were talking about a while ago about abandoning yourself to God's plan, right?
Right.
And it all brings to mind a quote from Pope Benedict. You know, the world offers you comfort, but you weren't made for comfort. You were made for greatness. Mm. And that's our Christian walk, I guess, summed up by Pope Benedict, I think.
As we've been talking about the communion of saints and being in heaven, eventually all of us are going to
see God face to face.
That's right.
That's right.
So we're going to go out with Face to Face by one of Daniel's favorite artists, Tori Harris.
Thank you all for being here. And thank you, Daniel, for being here. Go out, make a difference in somebody's life. Smile at somebody. You're listening to Living Real Radio on Hippie Radio 94.5.
Our Lady of Fatima, pray for us.
Our Lady of Fatima, pray for us.
Breath of heaven, come and dwell in us. Our hearts renew. Fire of God, illuminate, enkindle flames of truth. As we enter
listening to Living Real Radio, real issues in real time, with your host, John Angotti, Greg Walton, Robert Fiducia, and Julianne Staley. Be sure to tune in every week at 8 a.m. to Living Real Radio. Living Real Radio is sponsored by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized by Closets by Design. Call them today to schedule your appointment at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700.